Trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Back again.
We did it, Joe.
I haven't died yet. You know, every week another blessing.
I get on the call. I'm like, is he joining today? I don't know. Like, will his Zoom window just open to your weekend?
It's a funeral service. It's just like you're hearing some sort of a hymn being played. You're like, oh, dang it.
Shoot, I really wanted to talk about this with him. Oh well.
This is a slightly morbid thought, but like, if somebody in of our day and age dies, like, how do you get that word out? Like, by posting on, like, would somebody have to like get my phone and post on my Instagram account?
I mean, I think it would just be like a series of word of mouth stuff, you know, like.
But there's no like obituary that runs.
Well, there is. Everyone has an obituary still.
Do they? Where do they go?
Well, they go on, like, they go into newspapers if people submit them, but you can also just, your mortuary, like, list them. And so then it's, like, searchable. But was that how you got death news? Let's see if we know anyone in the obituaries.
Well, I feel like back in, I mean, I don't know. I haven't known that many people who have died, but I feel like my parents and stuff, you know, would like would read the paper and it'd be like, oh, this person died, if you weren't like a good friend of theirs. And then usually in the death notice, it said like, ah, there's a viewing on Thursday, like, you know, funerals on Friday or whatever. But I am not actively checking any like death notices. So like if somebody I knew died.
So it would just probably be, like, let's say you would just hear it, like it would just spread, especially someone like you, like so popular, like everyone would be like rushing to their phones to like find the most recent photo where they look good with you, and like posting it and being like RIP. And then I'd be like, what happened? He didn't even give me a heads up. He was dying today. And then it just snowballs from there.
See, I feel like the most obvious way to do this would be to post something from my social media accounts. But I don't think anybody could get into those.
Well, yeah. I guess we'd have to pay off the morgue, like Instagram to use your face ID one last time.
Right, exactly. It's like someone would have to like cut off my thumb or whatever. Oh, yeah, no, but it's not even finger. It would have to be my face.
Yeah, it's your face, yeah.
Can you use face ID with a picture of somebody, or does that not work?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure in like a Mission Impossible scenario, like there's some sort of ops that could figure.
Like you could 3D print my head and then use that.
That would work. Yeah. Things to figure out. I mean, maybe you could have a setting on Instagram where you're like, if I don't post in 3 days, just like say, I might be dead.
Put up a death notice. Like, wow, he hasn't reposted an Anne Hathaway picture in a while. Must be down for the count.
Instagram would just know it's time to send out the funeral notice.
I feel like this is something somebody should figure out and get on.
I feel like this is something someone has figured out, and we just aren't the people who.
Well, right, but they haven't figured it out that well. If it's not like a mass thing, you know.
I think you just aren't understanding how quickly word of mouth works. Like, you know, tried and true, that'll get out there, you know?
I guess.
I mean, for one, not everyone's on Instagram. So it's like, that's not even the way to
do it. Well, if they're not on Instagram, then I don't want them at my funeral.
I think, honestly, if you want to do the world's worst, like, belated April Fool's joke, we can test this. You know, we can see how quickly we can convince the world you're gone.
Okay, so in this case scenario, you're the only person who knows. I died on the podcast, you're the only person who knows, and then you're going to just start posting things, and we're going to see how.
No, I would call all our mutuals, right? So I have, like, Sierra's number. Sierra can then reach out to everyone she knows that I wouldn't. They reach out to everyone they know that they don't.
Oh, so it's like a phone chain.
Yeah, exactly. That's word of
mouth.
Is
that like protocol? If somebody dies, you should call, not like send a text.
I'm not like the death.
I'm asking
guru.
For
okay.
a friend. You
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah. I think it depends on the relationship. Like if
I died, would you like to receive a text or a phone call or an email?
If well, it depends from who. Like, you know what I mean?
From a stranger.
From a stranger, it would probably be an email. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's ways. I think it's just something you, like, know, right? Like, so if someone in my family died, there's people I know who I would call and be like, holy shit, like, this just
happened.
Well,
yeah, if it's your family
but
member.
But then there are, like, you know, other people who I'm like, nah, they might be curious to know about the funeral, so I'd, like, send them the obituary. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay. Hmm.
So I think that, yeah, it's a phone tree that goes into action, whether that be text, email, Instagram DMs, or vague stories that are like, oh my gosh, send me your thoughts and prayers. I really need it today. Like God got a good one today, you know?
See, I mean, I feel like if we're thinking about this, when the straight version of me died, I was just an Instagram post, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
Although I guess I did tell some people in person. So maybe I should tell some people in person that I'm dying and then post it on Instagram.
That you're but how would you know?
Well, maybe I feel an inkling.
Oh, you're just inspired. You're like, guys, I think today's the day.
It's like that.
Everyone's like, what? Is it free drinks?
I like get I get day? Like hit by a car and I'm like scrambling my phone. Gotta post.
Well,
anywho.
In any case, that's our episode for this
exciting
week. Thanks
stuff.
For tuning in.
Yes. A funeral themed one. Next week, are lilies an appropriate flower to send? Oh gosh. No, we're talking about Monkey Man. If this
Which Matt risked his life to see.
I did. So. I did. I went to the theaters and saw it. It was at like 10 in the morning at a theater that so there's this theater on 34th Street in New York. This is really New York specific, so sorry for everyone who does not live here. But like the AMC on 34th Street, I think, or well, it's in an area where not a lot of people live. So I think it must do the most business like during the week, sort of like if people are in and like want to see something after work. But I feel like it can't actually do that much business like, you know, weekend mornings, because there's not like people who actually like live near there. Yeah. And I only kind of live near there, but all of the theaters are basically empty. So I went and saw Monkey Man there on Sunday, I think. Yeah, at like 10 a.m. There's maybe two other people in the theater. It was a lovely experience.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, I went and saw it Monday night, which is similar. Everyone already saw the movie. I was alone in the theater. But I had a good time.
I will say this about Monkey Man.
Oh, okay.
Going in, I thought it was a horror movie. I had truly not a clue what it was about. I had not seen a trailer. I had not really like done any research on it. So I was like, oh, okay, like horror movie, something with, I guess, monkeys. I don't know. The only thing I had seen was the poster, like the sort of red and black, which looked ominous to me.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, Dev Patel directed and starred in some kind of horror movie. Very into it. Did not realize that it was mostly not in English. Did not realize that it was actually like a John Wick-esque action movie. And was like sort of confused for parts of it, but was pleasantly surprised by the whole thing. So I was like,
that's
wow,
hilarious.
Would never have expected this.
I guess you should have known that I wouldn't do two in a row, you know?
Well,
I've just given you Immaculate. Like,
I guess that's true.
From me.
But and you gave me a Beyonce album. So I thought maybe you were just being kind to me because I was sick.
The cancer.
Yeah.
Cancer one.
You're like, let's do a retrospective on Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
I'd love to do a Maggie Rogers episode next week.
Yeah, I hadn't really heard about this until I like started seeing some things on TikTok about like, whoa, Monkey Man surprised me, or like transgender representation in Monkey Man. And I was like, what is this? And then I saw Dave Patel and I was like, oh, okay, say less, you know?
Yeah.
as well, one is known to do.
Because he's very hot, he's I will
very
say.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Like, I thought he was cute in Slumdog Millionaire, but as of late in, like, The Green Knight and David Copperfield, I was just like, oh, yeah. Sir. He has the best hair. His hair is so good. It's, like, absolutely incredible that an individual person on this earth has that hair. Like, in every scene, you can just sort of, like, look at it. It's almost the equivalent of, like, Julia Roberts' hair in the, like, 90s or whatever. Where it just, it's just so immaculate. Yeah. I could stare at it forever.
Yeah. 2 hours and 10 minutes. I mean, right there.
Exactly. And then he takes his shirt off at various points. And I was like, sending out my obituary notice as we're watching this will not survive the rest of this film, Dev.
Yeah. Well, it's also funny because he directed it. And so,
right.
Like, imagining the meta quality of being like, okay, ladies, now giggle when I bare my chest to you guys.
It's right.
Like, yes.
Sort of swoon.
Yeah. He understands. He's giving the people what they want. And you know what? I thank him for it.
Well,
he looks normal. You know, like, obviously.
Yes.
And, like, out of, you know, the realm of my capabilities. But compared to, like, the roided up superhero bodies we've been forced to embrace as, quote unquote, expected, this was refreshing.
Right. No. It's, like, nice to see a hot person that it feels like a normal hot person. Yeah. Like, he does not seem like he is at the gym 6 hours a week with a personal trainer and, like, only eating grilled chicken and having
6 hours a week, like, he probably is.
Or 6 hours a day. Sorry.
Let's be...
He's at the barely goes to the gym. I'm like, okay.
He basically does
6 hours a week. Yeah, that feels probably like correct, or maybe more, but like not a ton.
Yeah, yeah. It's not his whole personality. He still eats food.
Yes.
And it looks attainable if you had money and time. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
yes.
Not just a
and not cancer.
Not cancer. This is Matt's body plan for the summer.
Yes,
he's
right.
Gonna start strong and follow the Monkey Man routine.
Yes, I'm punch gonna. Yeah, has somebody interviewed him on this? What his workout plan was? I'd love to read that Cosmo article and bookmark it for later.
But no, it's a little movie that could. I mean, it had sort of a rough journey because Dev Patel, he had this idea for a story following this myth from India, and originally like asked his friend to like write it, and his friend was like, actually I don't think this is, I can't figure it out, like you need to help me. And so then he started writing it, and then he reached out to the guy who directed Chappie that he was in and was like, will you direct this?
He was
like,
in Chappie.
Yeah,
honestly, that's shocking because Chappie is the worst hair movie ever, because that woman's bangs and Chappie are deranged.
I am intelligence. I am human. I am Chappie.
Chappie? Bizarre.
Honestly, stuck with me. But no, he asked him, Neil Blomkamp, to direct it. And he was like, I think you have this vision, dude. You're coming at me with like full frames and costumes in mind. And so then Patel was like, okay, maybe I can direct it and star in it. And you know what? I already wrote it. So like, let's go for it, which is very cool. Congrats to him.
But then
triple threat.
So then he filmed it and Netflix bought the rights. But then because of the... Are you summoning them in a Beetlejuice-esque way? But then, sort of due to the pandemic, I think they dropped it.
No, it was more that it's everyone's mom's the word on it. But the rumor is that they didn't like how it presented, how Indian audiences might react to its more political undertones.
Oh,
as
okay.
India is a market that they've been actively losing.
Oh, gotcha.
So they,
and India is not does not look great in this movie, or the politics.
It specifically, like, the villain is very reminiscent of the current leadership and culture there right now. So Netflix chickened out, as they usually do, and kind of left this hanging.
But then Jordan Peele saw the movie.
I know, so cute.
And was like, yes, please. And so then he came on as a producer and was like, we got to get this into theaters. And then he persuaded Universal to buy the movie from Netflix. And so that is how it arrived to theaters. But like, crazy that Dev Patel like wrote, directed, acted in, produced this movie. Like, yeah, that's a lot of work from somebody. And yes, he's like, he's obviously a star, but he's not necessarily, I would say, like a Hollywood A-lister. So it is like a big move for him to get to do this and to have it, you know, be released so widely. Because also, yeah, I don't think it played any festivals, did it?
No, it didn't. It premiered at South by Southwest.
Oh, but this year.
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah. So yeah, it didn't, it's not like, it's not like it was, I feel like a lot of sort of actor directed movies will be made off of the actors like money that they have. So they'll sort of like self-finance and then take it to a festival and try to like find distribution there. But this like already had distribution going in. Yeah. So interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's, obviously it speaks to his passion, but I think it's also like, to his point and his sort of co-producers on it, they all cited the like the value of having this POV in an action film where, you know, even looking at something like Slumdog Millionaire or these action flicks like the Chris Hemsworth one on Netflix, they like take place Extraction. In foreign countries, but they're not really about the foreign country per se, or at least they're from a very white lens and white leads. And so I think the thing that motivated a lot of people to come on board with this was Dev Patel's like very specific angle and willingness to kind of add depth to a genre that sometimes is basically just a, I don't know, bodies being flung around and long cuts of gruesome deaths usually, but they,
how dare you speak ill of Extraction and Extraction 2.
Yeah.
Rude.
Yeah.
A lot of the equivalent comparisons I saw were to John Wick, which I think is accurate. It's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of fight scenes, like sort of extended fight scenes, which are obviously a John Wick staple. But also the camera work and the style of the movie is very heightened. And it's interesting to watch this knowing that Dev Patel is a first-time filmmaker, because it feels very like well done and sort of signaturely shot. Like, you're watching it and I kept noticing how well directed it was, and the cinematography, the lighting, you know, which I think a lot of times if it's a first time director, you get kind of like, I like very rudimentary directing skills, where it's just sort of like, okay, we're going to put a camera here, shoot this, put a camera there, shoot that, where this was very heightened. And yeah, the colors and the action sequences and everything, there was less like sort of, I don't, of the kind of world buildy mythology that John Wick has, like that's really not a part of this necessarily, but this also felt a lot more political and had a stronger message than John Wick does, which is like, don't kill your friend's dog, or your friend, somebody else's dog.
Be careful whose dog you kill. Yeah.
If you're going to kill a dog, don't kill the hitman's dog.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think John Wick operates in sort of this alternate reality where you like have to forego some sense of realism with the amount of assassins.
I don't know. No. You don't know how many assassins there are in the world, Shelby.
Well, I don't think they have a secret hotel where it's like, peace be unto you. Well, you know, it's like,
if they had a hotel that was secret, you wouldn't know about it.
Okay,
so
but anyways, my point is that
you're
this
playing
is more
right into their to what they want everyone to think, which is that there's not an assassin hotel.
Yeah. But I do like that this was very cognizant of its setting. And so there's like a lot of, I mean, honestly, like really interesting visual stamps of just like the energy between the classes, because this is obviously a revenge fantasy of this unnamed character, the kid, or Bobby is what he goes by in some of the movie, where he's like trying to work his way, infiltrate this like upper class secret society sex club to get revenge on the chief of police who killed his mother as a child.
So don't kill people's dogs. Don't kill people's moms.
Exactly. That's really the brunt of it. And so it was like you see these two different sides of India, and there's a lot of interesting overhead shots of like the slums next to the high rises and all of this. And I think it was interesting knowing like he came from, we all know him from the movie Slumdog Millionaire, which I feel like has some threads here in his style, where you get that like sort of frenetic camera work running through tangled streets, and the colors are so bright, and there's like stark different, I don't know, costume moments and sort of abrupt scene changes and whatnot. And so it was fun to see like Dev Patel's like his career and the influence that must have had and the things he talked about sort of influencing his style here, but also having such a much more authentic examination of the culture he's sort of existing in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I it will. Cool, because it was like, I felt like the camera changed as he changed. Like, obviously, there's this sort of Creed style second act where he has to like buff up and get stronger. And the camera work changes with it, where the first half of the film's fight scenes feel very like frantic and all over the place, and you never know where it's going because he doesn't know where he's going, and it's like he's just flying by the seat of his pants. And then once he like knows how to fight and knows what he wants to do, there's such like a power and certainty in the camera work where it's just like zeroed in on exactly what he's gonna do, whether it's using his own mouth to stab a man or whatnot. I mean, I just thought it was really interesting to watch the whole movie play out and see how that changed. So it felt like he knew what he was doing, not just to tell the story, but to use the camera style and work to kind of influence that too.
Also, the fight scenes are just so well shot and choreographed, and the stunt work is incredible. And obviously, like, he isn't doing probably all of that, but there is a lot that he's doing, and there are sort of a lot of long shots, which is always interesting for fight scenes, because you know, you watch something like Taken and it's so many cuts because obviously Liam Neeson can't like do that much, and also it's just easier that way, where this, especially like there's a kitchen fight scene like in the back half of the movie that has a lot going on, and the shots for that are sometimes pretty long. And I was watching and thinking like, wow, these stunt doubles are really like, you know, nailing this. So yeah, it was really fun and exciting to watch his like directorial flair. And I'm excited to see what he does next with this. Like, if they make another one of these, I don't know if it was successful enough.
I think he dies, doesn't he? Isn't that the implication?
Well, does he?
Obviously death doesn't really count in cinema, but
I thought he just like
down, and he had been stabbed and had a knife twisted in his gut, you know. And then he,
I guess so,
to his mother carrying.
But like, remember Extraction?
Yeah,
where we thought he was dead, and then he came back. Like, I'm sort of. Yeah. Remember when John Wick fell off an 8-story building?
Yeah, of course.
So I feel like the death wasn't final enough. Yeah, it wasn't like his. Yes, yeah, it wasn't a severed head, and even that, I would say, could have been a body double. His twin was there, you know, unclear.
Yeah. Anakin, how did this compare to the resident? You're the resident, Shelby. Gross action head. So, John Wick, Extraction, this, like, how do you think it stood up?
I mean, I think as far as the action sequences go, it's hard to compete with the later John Wick movies, which obviously have like such a massive budget for that. Mm-hmm. And then also something like Extraction, which was, you know, directed by stunt people. So I think that both of those are steering more into the action. And also both those movies like don't really have that much of a plot outside of it. Where this, I guess like if you were grading just action, like this is a very good action movie. I don't know if it necessarily lives up to those two, but those are also two of the best action movies I feel like we've had in recent years. like in comparison to Marvel and the Fast and the Furious and like some of the more Mission general Impossible, yeah, yeah, Mission Impossible, I think the action here is better. Like Fast and Furious and stuff obviously have more sort of stunts rather than fight scenes, but the fight scenes I think were really great in this. The thing that I sort of had trouble with this movie, and I don't know if like it was like that I'm just not super like keyed into Indian culture and sort of like what's going on there, or if it's that I thought this was going to be a horror movie and it wasn't. But I felt like it was a little bit confusing to figure out what was going on, and they sort of wait a while before they like they kind of plop you down in the middle of the action and you're following Dev Patel's character as he's like interacting with this woman who runs a brothel, and you know the and this he's in this fight club where he's like a playing a monkey and things, so like there's stuff going on, but I felt like it took a while, like probably over an hour into the movie, before they really sort of stopped down at the like transgender temple community or whatever and sort of give you the backstory and be like, okay, here's what's happening. And so I found it kind of hard through the first half to be like, am I missing something? Or like, did I miss? like what? Like, I wasn't sure if I had like somehow missed something, and that's why I was confused, or if it was sort of like a purposeful confused because they didn't want to, you know, they were like saving information to give you later, which I think is what happened. And once you got to the end of the movie, I felt like I sort of had a pretty good idea of everything that had happened, but I did think that, like, you know, part of the beauty of something like John Wick is just how simple and straightforward it is. You know what's going on. Where this felt like some of the fight scenes in the first half of the movie, I was sort of a little bit preoccupied because I was trying to figure out like, okay, wait, who are these people and why is he doing this? And and like especially the so he's in this fight club where he is the monkey man, which is like where the title comes from, where he like wears this monkey mask, and it's like a gambling ring. So there's this whole plot line of like, oh, he's going to throw these fights so that other people can get money based on the gambling. But then, oh, he's actually not going to throw the fight. He's going to bet on himself, but through another person. There's just like a lot of stuff going on with that that sort of doesn't.
He doesn't bet on himself. He tells the guy, I'm going to lose. And
that
prove that I'm someone you want to be with.
But it's like there's a lot of stuff going on with that that really necessarily factor in that much to the plot. And so I felt like it was a little bit chaotic in some regards. And I kind of wonder if maybe like, if somebody else had written this script, like they could have like cleaned up a little bit of that. But
it's funny because I kind of liked the first half more, just because like it gave enough for me where it's like you have like really short rapid flashbacks to like you know, a trauma that was inflicted as a child. Like you see his mom happy and then there's suddenly flames and there's blood and everything's like triggering him, and I felt like that was interesting because instead of something like John Wick where you're like, okay, this guy's just reacting to this thing that just happened to him, it's like you can feel sort of the festering frustration and this like pent up anger in everything he's doing, where he's like doing this like boxing ring because he has nothing else going for him, but then he starts to try and find his way, like weasel his way into this place. I did wonder like, wait, who's the chief of police? Like what happened there? Like why him? But I was so like enamored with his tension. Like it was just so palpable and so mesmerizing to watch him try and like stumble into this assassin plot with no skill set whatsoever, that I was just like, it was the same sort of tension you get from, I mean, obviously a lot different, but something like, I don't know, something more like a heist where you're like waiting to see if they can pull it off. And so every time he's about to slip up, like he gets too mad when he's watching these girls be abused or he's like about to lose it all. And then, I don't know, I found it so compelling. And then to see him absolutely botch the first assassination attempt, that was like such an exciting and sad and sort of anxiety inducing moment, because you're watching him like try to escape and everything keeps going wrong, and he's like hit by a police car, he's caught by the police, and then he escapes again, and then he's off again, and then he's shot again, and it's just like so hectic that I felt like it was different and interesting and more realistic to what that sort of, you know, revenge cycle would actually look like. And then the second act, you know, he kind of finds his spiritual leader in this transgender community that rescued him and is sort of another offcast of the society. And then it gets sort of mystical in a way where he's like, then it kind of got more confusing to me, because then that's when more of the like politics come in and the like gurus in, and you realize the guru is like corrupt and working with the chief of police and the chief of police, and then you get the whole backstory, and then it's like, okay, well, wait, what? And that's where I was sort of like,
but the guru was like in the movie earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also in the beginning, there's this also this whole plot line with this girl who's like a prostitute who he sort of like, no, but I don't think, like, did he?
No.
They didn't know each other. But I sort of got the sense that, like, I was like, who, like, is she somehow tied into this? But she kind of wasn't.
I think they were
meant to be, like, and they just, like, locked eyes.
Well, that, but I think it's more that she saw him, like, she saw the anger, and she's like, she chose a different path, right? Like, she's like,
right,
you have to just power through, like, this is the system or whatever. So mm-hmm. I think they were meant to be, like, different sides of the coin.
Yeah.
And she finds her violent, her anger too, or whatever. In the
yeah, because then but it was, she like knocks sexually out the mistress lady.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, there was that like element of the, like not necessarily manic pixie dream girl, but almost like this, she's like this damsel who's like there to serve as the
mm-hmm.
eye candy for how cruel these ugly, ugly men are to do this to these beautiful, beautiful yeah. women.
Mm hmm.
Which is tough because it's like an interesting angle of the caste system and sort of this, you know, the misogyny and the sexism that plays out and how much that ends up being violence against women. And you see that in both the you know, brothel aspect of like having these girls on the menu that these men can order from. And then also the transgender community being isolated and abused. And so I think that's like an interesting element to kind of see this man want to fight for, but then it does kind of get lost in the weeds of everything else.
It's like it all sort of makes sense. Like, and when you look back on it, it's actually not that confusing of a plot line. It's, you know, it's like, oh, the chief of police and the guru guy are sort of like in this evil corrupt system that killed his mom, and now he's trying to get revenge on them. But sort of it's just not in a linear format. They're kind of like jumps around a little bit, like when you're getting the information. So it's just like a little bit more confusing.
Well, and you're not clear when he decides the guru is the true evil, you know what
right.
I mean? Because so much of his talk is just about the chief of police, but then the mm-hmm. ultimate face down is with the guru. So it's sort of like, okay.
So is the guru guy, is that like, the political commentary is the head of India sort of that energy at the moment?
Yeah. So I was reading a little bit about it, but it's like there was the current politics. There's a Hindu who wants to like, who's really focused on building I'm obviously not the expert here, and I know I'm going to sound idiotic to anyone who knows more about this, but the general idea that's mirrored in this movie is sort of the leaders who are seen as these sort of everyman people are actually only for the Hindu faith and are very anti-Muslim, and that's sort of some of the footage you see in the film, which is, you know, Muslims being attacked and beat up by police or Hinduism.
Did you read that book, A Burning, a couple of years ago that came out?
Yes.
Because I feel like that had a similar, like, I think that talked about that plot line. So I'm like, oh, that must be like the things you know or you can learn about other countries. Crazy.
No, it's everything's messy and everything's corrupt and it's all bad and all of that. And I think that's part of the power of movies like this, is that it does remind you to kind of step outside yourself and consider other experiences. And I think that was his motivation too in creating this, is like he talked about all growing up loving like the Jackie Chan films, loving the, you know, westerns, loving the action films that starred all these like white brawny dudes, and wanting to make something that his culture would be like excited to put on and see himself in and all of that. So there is an element of like commerciality playing here, where it's just a fun movie that has a lot of great action pieces, that is doing things that have been done a lot before, but is, you know, adding value because it's a different POV. But then also, I think he wanted to bring some heart to it and some, like, you know, he talks about his love for his country and how much he values it, but how like hard it is when there's so much to be disappointed in or bothered by or frustrated by. And so I think this movie was also a chance for him to kind of try to call that out.
Mm-hmm. I also really loved the like LGBT plot line that's in this. It came as like such a delightful sort of surprise halfway through that there's this, you know, sort of like community of religious people who are like, it's, I guess, like non-binary sort of trans.
Specific term and like the Hijra or something, the third gender, these members of society that have been cast off because they're.
Which now that sexuality. I'm like, I think that there's a plot line in A Burning that's also about that.
Yeah, probably.
I'm like, wow, I need to remember that book better. But yeah, it's sort of like a two-spirit kind of energy. I'm sure that's not exactly accurate, but so they have like this temple that turns out like that the police are gonna try to shut down for some reason or another, or they want the land. And anyways, Dev Patel goes there to sort of he's taken care of, and then that's where he kind of, you know, has his Rocky-esque rebuilding period. And there's a scene where he is like training and takes his shirt off, and everyone is like, oh my gosh, and like is swooning. And I'm like, yes, exactly. And that's the kind of LGBT representation we're looking for. People swooning over Dev Patel.
Exactly.
And then at the end, they all come in with these like gorgeous outfits and kick ass, which I also loved.
That was great. That was really cool. And I wish there'd been maybe even more of it, because they kind of just disappear. And I was like, wait, what's happening here? Where do they go? Like, what's
also
the next step?
Love a fight scene where somebody is wearing a cool outfit. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, we need to bring fashion to the action genre more than we do.
Yeah, no, they were looking fine. And honestly, like that, I think was such a cool set. Like, because again, it was really chaotic, but it was really focused on it. And so there was like fireworks being used.
Oh,
there were all sorts of weapons, like, you know, serving trays and glass bottles, of course, and a terrifying stint with a knife in an elevator that just like shouldn't have made me so entranced by Dave Patel's killer eyes, but he looked good doing it. I don't know what to say. I don't know what it means about me, but I was like, damn.
The scariest part for me is when he chopped the woman's thumb off with the serving tray. I was like, oh,
that's a strong arm. That's a
good like, is that possible? Should I be worried about this?
I think it's very possible. I mean, I think,
well, you know, they always said it, that like you could chop off, like you could bite off your finger like a baby carrot.
Yeah.
And I am not, I'm like, I will not be the one to test that, but that is wild.
Well, I mean, he literally bites off someone's nose in the middle of a fight. Like, he's playing.
Wait, but I feel like you could bite off a nose.
Well,
you know?
I know, but I'm saying this man has no scruples. Like, of course, you can slam it down hard enough. You have enough anger in that swing. Like, I mean, people cut.
Well, when you're fighting for your life, if you have to bite somebody's nose, you have to bite somebody's nose.
I know, and I liked that, because usually it's all like Born Identity, you know, they're all just like experts. It's all just a matter of like breathless punches. But in this first fight sequence, he is just like struggling, and he's doing whatever he can to get out from under him.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Honestly, the best part, the funniest moment, because this movie is kind of funny, which is fun. But the funniest moment was after he does his training, he decides to go back and win some money, I think, to like help the the people keep their temple, I think is the main sidetrack. And he just like, everyone thinks he'll lose again because he was a bad fighter originally. And then first bell, he just knocks the guy out.
Yeah, he just like clocks him once and boop, down. And the like South African like MC of the fight is very awkward and like, okay, like what do we do now? That like this is supposed to go on longer. That actually reminded me, I think this was Ronda Rousey, but I can't remember. At one point when I was in college, my fraternity, with a blast from the past, was having like a rush event. And so that's like where you have some sort of like party or something and you invite all of these like freshmen over and you sort of like get to know them and try to figure out like, okay, who do we like? Who do we not like, you know, of this group? And so somebody in our fraternity, obviously not me, had the idea like, oh, there's this MMA fight that we should watch that's coming on. And so it was this whole ordeal of like, okay, somebody on the hall has to get like, you know, pay-per-view. We have to pay for this thing. And I was like, I don't want to have to go and watch this, you know, like you know, cage match or whatever. They're so terrifying and just like sad and sort of depressing. And I was like, I don't want to have to then have a conversation with a bunch of people afterwards. Like, just, I don't want to do this, but you know, whatever, you're required to. So we're like up on the hall and they're like, okay, the match is about to start. And I'm like, okay, like I'm going to take as long as humanly possible to like go down there and watch this. And truly like 30 seconds later, they're like, oh, it finished. Like she knocked the, like whoever was knocked out. And it was like, oh, okay, well, great. Perfect. Like now we can just pretend that this did not ever happen.
Yeah.
So I think that happens in real life is what I'm saying.
It has to at some point, you know, and it was a truly supreme kick. So it, the science checks out, you know, there's no surviving that.
Yeah, we have really no qualms with the science of this movie and the action scenes. Yeah, all very accurate. All
checks out. Yeah, it feels very realistic. I mean, he fights someone literally twice his size, but like is able to get out from under him pretty quick. And
as ex-Marines, Shelby and I have gone through a lot of this training.
We can tell when something's authentic.
Well, okay. I do have one other thing, though, that I was like, what are we doing here? Like, this is a little more style over substance. Early in the movie, there's a scene where somebody steals the purse of this, the manager of the brothel thing, and like brings it to Dev Patel. And there's like maybe 15 handoffs in this like long relay race of people passing this purse to each other before it gets to Dev Patel. And it's like, okay, I would believe like maybe three people touched this on the way, but it was truly like over a dozen.
He's very careful.
And it's like kids and a wife and a cook and a this and a that. And it's like, what are we doing here? Like, I understand that you want this scene, this like sequence of like people running through the sort of slums of fake Mumbai. But this is
actually
too much.
I think it is because that was the one time they did get to shoot in Mumbai. Like it was after they finished filming in Indonesia or whatever. And
right,
then
they
finally got screened for Mumbai. So he's like, okay, let's do it.
but the movie actually, Gotham. It's like Gotham is like New York, but it's not. This is set in some city that's not real.
But it's
supposedly Mumbai. Yes. Oh, okay. I was looking this up.
Okay.
Because I was like, where is this filmed? And it's someplace, Katana, which is not actually a real city.
Okay. I hope you're right, because otherwise that'll be really embarrassing.
No, I looked it up. I swear.
I believe you.
It means like terror in Hindi or something.
That plays out. I mean, yeah, I think it was overall like, I had a good time. Everyone had a good time. This has like 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. It got like a B+ on the cinema score. Like it only made $10 million in its first weekend, but I think that was sort of expected for it. And also the word of mouth is expected to kind of help it through the next couple of weeks too. And so it's like, I think generally this is a great movie. Obviously there's some you know, issues or whatever, where I'm like, you could have lost 30 minutes. You needed to like streamline this, like blah, blah, blah. But I think with the fact that this is a first time directing and also happens to be like such an interesting, I don't know, sort of setting and characters. Like, honestly, my only thing was like, get rid of the sympathetic sex worker. Like, I, not that, not that I don't value
women out the movie, get them out.
But it's like, either make it more or like get rid of it, because it's not giving me anything. It was like a weird distraction for me. And that could have saved like 20 minutes probably of the film.
And if I did like whatever the scene was where they were running through like the brothel or something, and you get that brief moment, it's just like some man like plowing the back of a woman, and then and then they bust in and it's fighting. I was like, I love this.
Well, and also, actually, no, my number one question leaving the theater was, what happened to the little, like, sidekick guy?
Oh, yeah, the boy?
Yeah, no, like, the man who hires him to be sort of his helper, and, like, that's how he gets up into the higher offices of the building.
Unclear.
Like, he runs away with him for some reason, and then they kind of get separated, and he's wanted, the smaller guy. And then he, like, realizes Monkey Man's back and goes to see his fight. And so I thought he'd show up to, like, I don't know, ask if he needs help or, like, you know, kill someone too. But he just disappeared. He's just like, oh,
maybe he's going to, like, show up and you know, sort of do medical emergency CPR on Dev. And and we're going to have Monkey Man too.
Yeah. And it was also like, I guess I'd want to talk to Dev about some of his reasons, because like, he doesn't kill the leader, the sort of face of the party, but he does kill the guru, obviously. And so it's like, well, why didn't the leader need to get some freaking throats or something?
You need someone for the second movie.
Yeah.
The villain for the second movie, Shelby, duh.
Yeah. And you know what? To Dev's credit, I also want to say that I appreciated how, while he still highlighted the realities of violence against women, he didn't necessarily indulge in showing it. And so I did cry during the flashback scene, and it was really, really sad and traumatizing to imagine. But it wasn't like some of the more gratuitous, like, it wasn't as bad as I maybe was holding my breath for, because I'm so used to having to watch
Game,
like,
of Thrones,
whether it's rape or like real in your face, like watch the blood drain from her eyes as you're beating her to death or whatever. It was played like very respectfully, and I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really like this. I'm excited to see what Dev Patel does next, because this feels like it was well done, and he now could like pick to do a lot of different type of things. Maybe he'll do Maestro.
I hope he's in the next Jordan Peele movie, you know? I think that could be a fun pairing.
Oh, yeah. Have they announced who's in that?
Oh, does he have a new film?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that he does. It was supposed to come out Christmas, but then it got bumped because I think the writer's strike or the actor's strike. But I don't know. I don't think that there's a cast announced for it yet.
Oh, okay.
But a Dev Patel, Kiki Palmer movie?
Oh, yeah. Sign me up. Like, honestly, Dev Patel in a rom-com is overdue. And I think that'd be great. So
has he not been in a rom-com?
But no. I mean, unless you count freaking Slumdog Millionaire.
Which we don't really. Yeah. I'm looking up the Jordan Peele career to see if we have any updates on this. Oh, I forgot that he did Candyman. That was
Well, he didn't do it.
Well, yeah, but he was like, Peele's next directorial effort was set to be released on December 25th, 2024, before being quietly pulled from Universal's release schedule following the impact of the 2023 Hollywood labor disputes. Oh, is that what we're calling them now? So, yes, we don't know. But maybe it is. Maybe it'll be Dev.
Maybe.
We can only hope. Okay, when does Taylor Swift's album come out? Is that next week?
It's the 19th, so
next week we need to figure out what we're doing.
Next week, I could do next week still. I think isn't your
my
Arena
what?
Movie coming out?
No, I think that also comes out the 19th.
Oh. There's something coming out, I swear.
Next week is consult the schedule. 2024 movies. No, it's definitely not Fall Guy. That doesn't come out, I want to say, until May, maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like that has a bit before it comes out. 2024, April. Let's see what we got. Oh, Civil War.
Oh,
Civil War
yes.
comes
oh my gosh,
out.
I'm so excited.
Also, the Netflix movie Woody Woodpecker Goes to Camp. So that's another as a backup option for us.
Good to know.
Good
Are
to
they
know.
Remaking Good Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's yeah. Dead?
Yes, for BET Plus. I don't know what that is, but
so is
Nicole Richie.
Good. Oh, weird.
Unclear. Okay. And then the following week is the Abigail week, but that week we'll do Taylor Swift. And then the following week is Challengers, which we will definitely be discussing.
So no Abigail. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess no Abigail. And then the week after that, we have the Fall Guy and the Anne Hathaway hot mom dating Harry Styles movie.
Perfect. Something to look forward to.
And then I'll be done with chemo.
Oh my gosh, you'll be healed.
Well, hopefully.
No funeral required.
Yeah, TBD on the healing, but the... But round one of chemo will at least be done.
Yeah. Positive vibes.
Positive vibes. Positive vibes.
Yeah.
And prayers and thoughts. And
lots of thoughts.
If anybody would like to rig a fight club and make me thousands of dollars, I would also gladly accept that.
Yeah, of course.
Please nobody stab me with their secret dagger sandal that they have.
Yeah.
Nobody bite off my nose or chop off my finger with a serving tray.
I mean, I really do think the knife by mouth is the worst death in this movie.
I guess. I don't know.
You're like,
the
whatever.
Serving tray really, really
that
struck
was just
me.
That was just a thumb.
I know. And she was already dead, I think. But
yeah.
Well, okay. We'll be back next week to discuss Civil War, provided that neither of us have... died by then. Stay tuned for our obituaries.
Yeah,
but
for the phone calls and emails from people who know you, who know us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, the phones, the calls, the emails, smoke signals, pigeons. a gender reveal, if you will. Yeah. I would like a smoke machine. Pulling a black smoke. Is he alive or is he dead? Unclear. John, we'll pop your balloon and find out. Oh no, he's dead. Okay, except there's cremated ash in there. Whoopsies. Okay, I'm clearly losing my mind in my quarantine. But thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye.